Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we look at where art and law meet with the Copyright Forum. And here to answer your questions, a great panel of experts. Paul Rapp specializes in intellectual property law, including copyright, trademark, internet, art, and entertainment matters. He's also an adjunct professor of copyright, art, and entertainment law at Albany Law School. He does speaking engagements, bar mitzvahs. You've probably seen him around. And the man has a traveling road. He's the George Jessel of copyright law. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law, who is here, is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio, maintains a website, buttonwoodart.com. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So before we get to the calls, there was this news item crossed. It was Associated Press via Wall Street Journal where I saw it. Federal appeals court judge agreed Monday to delay a court challenge to Google's plans to create the world's largest digital library while an appeals panel considers whether authors should receive class status. So now Google has already scanned more than 20 million books for this project. And the Authors Guild says it's impractical and expensive for each author to sue Google and has asked for $750 in damages for each copyrighted book. It says Google was not making fair use of copyrighted material. So what is fair use in this case?
Go ahead, Polly. Take it.
We as the Supreme Court of WAMC.
Yeah.
Well, basically, fair use is when it's okay to infringe someone's copyrights, when it's determined to be in society's interest to allow copying to take place. And a typical example of fair use is news reporting. You know, if you you can't report on something like a book, without actually quoting parts of the book,
or perhaps showing the cover yeah. inside art,
or criticism, education uses are fair use,
parody,
and I'm here, I mean they're copying all of these books into a database so that people can do searches for them, and whether or not that's fair use is an interesting question, and
what do you think?
I think it is, and I think the Authors Guild is nuts to be challenging this, because this is the best thing for authors that ever happened. It's not like Google is going to be giving your books away.
So they're giving snippets of the book
giving snippets of the books away. But, you know, there's a lot of books out there that are being scanned in that people don't know about and that are going to come up on a search. You know, when the search results come out, you know there's going to be a little blue hyperlink to go buy the book somewhere.
Yep.
You know, so
do we know that?
We don't know that, but actually, Google Books, it does have that, or at least you become aware of the book so you can go find it. It's also it'll be the greatest plagiarism investigative device ever. You put a sentence out of from your book in there and see if anybody else had used that sentence, and you got them.
So as I understand it, they were close to a deal and the judge said, wait a minute, let's not move so fast. So do you think authors are of your mind that, hey, this is good for us, let's do the deal, take our 750 and move on?
I think a lot are. I mean, I have no idea what, and the National Writers Guild, I don't think, has taken a position on this like the Authors Guild has.
But that doesn't cover books by non-Writers Guild authors.
I mean, they're talking about a class
like
action.
Me.
Like you. Well, this is an interesting story. We'll see how it unfolds, and probably by the next Copyright Forum, there'll be some motion on this. We have a full bank of calls at 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones. Dan, or is it Don? Don, Great Barrington, how are you?
Good, how are you? It's Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. I had a question about how to copyright a blog. I've been on the copyright website, and there doesn't seem to be a very clear way saying, all right, this is my blog to date, and I want to copyright it.
Is your blog mostly text, or is it text and images? Is it music? What's on your blog?
It's mostly text, but there's images, too, that I create.
The images you've created.
Well, keep in mind that as soon as you create them, Dan, they are protected by copyright. The issue is registration.
Right, yeah. Well, registering, I guess, would be the question I meant.
Yeah, I just registered a website that had all kinds of stuff. It had video on it, and it had music. And, you know, you just send it all in. You send in every page, and you send in, you know, if there's component parts, and you tell them that you are protecting the text and the pictures and the video and the music.
Wouldn't it have to be a serial copyright, though, since he'll be adding to the blog?
I'm not sure. I mean, you could do it every 3 months. Yeah. That would protect you. Right. But I believe there's a way to do serials where you put out, you know, if you regularly update your blog. And I think that's once a year?
Yeah.
Serial?
Yeah.
Well, another thing Dan can do is he can call the copyright office. They're really easy to reach, relatively easy. Go to www.copyright.gov. Get their phone number. Give them a call. The last time I called, I think I had to wait on maybe 15 or 20 minutes. It wasn't onerous. And they have very helpful people there that can answer your questions directly and are doing it daily.
Oh, sorry, I didn't even think of that.
All right. Dan, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good luck. All right. Number one was a satisfied customer. Let's go to line two. Joe in Middletown, you're on. Middletown or Middleton?
Middletown, yeah, thank you. Tell me if my understanding regarding the following matter is correct. I've been advised that if I go into, let's say, a museum, an art museum, and there are paintings hanging in there, and there's no prohibition against photography. If I take a photograph of that painting, I create my own image. My understanding is that copyright goes to authorship, and the people who own that hundreds of years old painting don't have any claim to the authorship of it. And if I take that image I create, I can now use that image and start putting it on tchotchkes, magnets, T-shirts, coffee cups, things like that, and that they have no copyright claim to prohibit me from doing that. Does that sound correct to you?
Yes, but I would be amazed at any museum or gallery that does not have a photo prohibition of photography.
Well, there are some. There are some legit and quite large ones even, believe it or not. There are some. Within the national government, for example, within the National Park Service, there are paintings on display that they let you photograph.
Well, the government cannot own copyright in anything. So paintings or works of art or music, sculpture, whatever that the government owns, they cannot restrict the use of it.
So basically, you can do what you're saying.
But the painting has to be in the public domain.
Right,
it has to be an old painting. If it's a recent painting, the painter probably still holds copyright to it.
The painter himself could own some copyright to it.
Yeah. But,
right,
you know,
good point.
But, you know, and even if there's a restriction in a museum of photographs, if you sneak one in and it's a public domain painting, you're free to go. I mean, the museums put those up there in order to sell prints and to license images of paintings that are already in the public domain. So.
Well, also, they put that prohibition up so that people aren't bringing in heavy-duty lighting and possibly damaging the painting.
Yeah, that's clearly a visitation matter.
Yeah.
But let's take an institution like the Metropolitan Museum of Art that has its own gift shop, its own product line. Mm-hmm. They're selling all their own images. You're saying that even if I got in there, and not that I'm interested in doing this, but theoretically, if somebody went in there and took a picture of one of their paintings that they do sell in their own merchandise, you could market it yourself, and they couldn't try and stop you. Of course, they could try and stop you.
As long as it was a painting that is in the public
domain, meaning it's a
painting from, more than, 50 or 60 or 70 years ago.
Yeah.
Right, copyrights expire after that amount of time, you mean?
Well, these old paintings were never copyrighted. They're in the public domain.
Okay.
Yeah.
From there. But keep in mind, in case our listeners don't understand this, or some of them, you know, you can't go in and take an image off of one of the museum's brochures and turn around and do it, because they're going to hold some kind of protection
on their copy of the image.
So even if it's a picture of a public, even
if they hire someone to take it, and they have a particular take on that, then
that's their version of that.
Well, how can you
tell? Although there are court cases that say
Polk.
You know, the Corbis Archive tried to enforce copyrights on, like, photographs of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
You know, and the court said there's no creativity. I mean, technically, taking this photograph and making sure the colors are perfect and all that, it may be technically amazing, it may be expensive, but there's no creativity because all you're trying to do is make an exact reproduction of something that exists. So there's no copyright protection to that. So,
but keep in mind, you still had to fight a lawsuit, and as we know, copyright.
Why are you looking at it that way?
Well, because I had to pay one somewhere in the neighborhood of $450 an hour.
Ouch.
Can I get a corollary question regarding a trademark issue regarding historical?
Very quickly. Artifacts? Very quickly.
Okay. There's a historical flag that comes out of the Civil War, and the Citadel Military College in South Carolina has adopted that flag and now has claimed it as a trademark. Does that sound like something that they would have full, solid ground to stand on?
There might be an issue there because it's suggesting an affiliation, you know, with a military organization when... you know, the Citadel, well, maybe the Citadel does. It's a military school. But there could be some issues with that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Joe, thanks a lot. Paul Rapp is our guest, Bill Westwood and Polly Law. They are the copyright crew. We'll be back with more of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988. LGLC.org. AD George Construction, for over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential construction needs, remodeling, additions, and more, from design to completion, 413-256-6752. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Drawn to Excellence, Renaissance to Romantic drawings from a private collection, rare masterworks from the 16th to early 19th century, smith.edu/artmuseum. Craft Producers, Manchester, Vermont, presenting the Manchester Fall Art and Craft Festival, formerly at Hildene, featuring 175 juried artisans, September 28th through 30th, craftproducers.com. Community Loan Fund of the Capital Region, offering an 8-week business planning class beginning Saturday, September 22nd in partnership with the College of St. Rose, mycommunityloanfund.org. And Ruggie's Subaru in the Village of Rhinebeck, new Subarus and over 150 pre-owned vehicles, specializing in Subaru and GM vehicles service and parts, ruggiessubaru.com.
Say, did you know the fun drive is coming up? Well, it's true. October 1st, it all kicks off. It's a Monday morning. We hope you are with us. And join us for the mayhem and help keep this station alive. It's the Copyright Forum, Vox Pop, WAMC, 800-348-2551. Paul Rapp, you have some stuff going on.
Yeah, tonight I'm going to be giving a lecture on intellectual property issues for artists up in Saratoga Springs at the Saratoga Arts Center. And you said we can't mention prices.
I would not.
But if it's free, is that a price?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
And you can call them for reservations. I think they're filling up, but that's tonight at 6.
Okay. That's it?
That's it.
Wasn't there a bar mitzvah or something?
I'm not going to talk about that.
All right, fair enough. Polly, what do you have?
Oh, well, I have a show currently of my work at the Hudson Coffee Traders in Kingston, New York, right across from the county courthouse.
Hmm.
Up until the end of October.
Very lovely. Well, very good. 800-348-2551 is our number. And back to the phones we go. Stuart in Newburgh. Stuart, you are on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about an academic paper. A friend of mine is writing a paper for a journal, and she was complaining about how long it was taking to get permissions to copy the artwork, to print copies of the artwork in the context of her paper. And I said I didn't think she had to do that because that would be fair use if she's writing a paper of criticism about artwork, and this is demonstrative to her paper. So I wonder if you have an opinion on that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
It's fair use. I mean, if you're putting artwork in just to decorate the paper, which you wouldn't do in an academic paper, then it might not be fair use. But if she is talking about the artwork, she is absolutely entitled to.
Yeah, I mean, if the text directly references the image, then definitely it's fair use, and it's for an academic purpose.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks a lot.
You got Stuart, thank you.
Got your academic and you got your criticism right there.
Belt and braces.
Yep.
All right. Mike in Niskayuna, you're on Vox Pop.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My question is about computer code. I understand that if you write, if you have text that you want to submit to register a copyright, you only have to submit 25% of written text. But when it comes to computer code, you have to submit 100% of it. And then once it's down in Washington, is it, that the public is available to, or it's available for the public to see.
No.
And that somehow that just doesn't seem right to me. It seems like you should be able to submit only 95% or something to withhold something as just a little bit of extra security.
Well,
so that somebody can't go down there and just see what you've done.
Yeah, I think you're confusing patent with copyright. With a patent, you have to submit everything, and the public, you know, can see it. But
okay.
your patent runs for 20 years, and even though they can see it, they can't use it without your okay. You can copyright a computer code, and you will get protected the expressive elements. And this is something that judges have been like going through conniptions, trying to describe what gets protected. But they do allow, and they specifically say they will grant copyrights for software. And I believe, and this is mind-boggling to me, you only have to submit the first 200 and the last 200 lines of the code, and then you're sort of on the honor system for the rest
wow.
of it.
Okay.
But you can check copyright.gov, and it will explain this to you. But, you know, what protection you get, who knows?
Interesting. I guess it's evolving.
Or even if you will get the protection at all.
Yeah.
Because the examiners may decide there's nothing really unique.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but they're not seeing, you know, they're only seeing part of it.
That's right.
It will, I think it will protect you from wholesale copying. You know, if someone just takes it and rips off, you know, and images your software code and uses it, I'm sure you would, copyright would back you up. But if they take, you know, little algorithms and stuff, you know, out, they probably wouldn't.
It seems like a thorny issue, much like the pharmaceutical industry faced. In other words, if all the code is there when you patent it, then someone says, well, I'll change just a line here.
Well, they love doing that.
And we're good to go.
Right. We got another 20 years.
So it is available for public perusal, though.
In a patent
yeah.
set, yeah. In a patent
no,
sense.
No, not in a patent sense, I'm saying, as in a copyright.
No.
No.
It wouldn't be available for
no.
public.
No. No.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call. It's Dean's turn in Ludlow. Dean, you're on.
Hey, greetings, everybody. I read a story a long, long time ago, and I wondered how viable it was. What happened was a gentleman had an idea, a design idea, but he didn't want to go through the normal patent issues. So he tattooed the idea on his back. and of course, what happened was he also had the written designs that he put down. Someone tried to steal them. And he was able to prove in a court of law that he did, in fact, was the originator because he had a tattoo on his back with a date stamp and documents corroborating it. Is it possible for that to really be used?
No.
Well, it's a new twist on the poor man's copyright.
That's right.
What's
That's
the
right.
poor man's copyright?
Where go ahead.
Right. No, you go where you mail a copy of your work to yourself. Registered mail or some variation thereof.
And you don't open it,
so it's always there. Copyright is not about proving necessarily so much that you did something. It's really about, protecting, you know, giving yourself some protection for what you've created and put into a tangible form.
But if he did prove that he did it first, he's got it. I mean,
theoretically, who owns the copyright, him or the tattoo artist?
Well, it depends if it was his idea and the tattoo artist. Did the guy have
it a work for hire?
Did the guy have it on his back backwards so it looked right when he looked in the mirror?
Actually, I couldn't tell you that. I was just curious about the idea.
I think like Polly said, it's a variation on the poor man's copyright theme.
Plus, the tattoo would cost more than just registering the damn thing.
Yeah, it only cost you $35 to register a copyright.
And he tattooed himself.
Oh.
Maybe he did. And then maybe he mailed himself to himself.
Yes, and never opened it.
Well, things are getting silly now, Dean.
Dean, thank you very much.
Thanks for this. We appreciate it. Let's go to Mary in Kingston. Mary, you're on.
Hi. I have questions about the use of music when videotaping. if you're videotaping on the street, I mean, because there are sort of rumors that I've heard, but I never knew what was true. If you're videotaping on the street and there's music playing around out of somebody's radio or something, and material in the videotape that you make, and let's say you show it in a few independent, you know, art sort of situations, that might give you some money, but not commercial, non-commercial, but, you know, you could make some money, maybe. and so what is your obligation if there's music, you know, even popular music playing on the street?
The rules on that seem to be changing. I mean, 10 years ago, music like that, you had to get a license. I talked to the producer of Strictly Ballroom, who said, you know, when they had the little kids, one of their phones ringtones went off, you know, with some popular song, and they actually had to excise that from the film.
Really?
Yeah, but it's growing to be accepted that, you know, incidental music, sort of accidental music that pops up is okay in a documentary. Film.
A documentary is not supposed to be arranged.
Yeah, it's like what's really happening.
Cinema verite.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up another question. Let's say you're interviewing someone and the music is in the background, the same situation. You're outside, there's music in the background, and but then there's a pause in the interview, but the music is still playing. So then in the editing, let's say, I'm just kind of making this up as I go, let's say you move the music to someplace else in the scene because it works better there.
Then
you're getting on the ice.
Then it's no longer incidental. Now it's
intentional.
Intentional, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And how long is that? I mean, is there a statute of limitations on that? Or, I mean, if I shot something 15 years ago and, you know, I used it now for a videotape, what would be the liability?
It would be the same liability. It doesn't really matter, you know, when you shoot it, if you just had it in the can and then showed it. You know, and there's no minimum. I mean, the fair use statute says a reasonable amount. So if you're using... You know, if you wind up using more, like your example, when you would take the music and move it around, I mean, that would be more than necessary. So it just has to be reasonable use.
Okay.
And there's no limit to the, like, it's not if you use 10 seconds, you're okay, but if you use 20, you're not okay.
No.
All right.
That's
okay,
a myth.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mary.
Yeah, I thought so.
Thanks a lot, Mary. It's Matt's turn. Matt in New Jersey, where are you calling from?
Robbinsville, New Jersey.
How's
outside of Princeton.
How's the signal?
Signal's great. I listen on the internet. I'm also a resident of Niskayuna and love WAMC.
Well, thanks for calling in. You're on with the copyright crew.
Yes. First of all, great program and great service to the listening community.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My question is, my son's assisting me on a poetry book I'm putting together, and he's making drawings that I will include in the book. Mm-hmm. Some of the drawings he's making are of settings or personalities that are noted personalities. Let's say a Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense in a characteristic pose, which he pulled off the internet and then drew and gave me the drawing, and that's what I'm including. Are there any infringements to that, to the person who created the photograph?
Ask Shepard Fairey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. Yeah, there are definite potential infringements of the work of the photographer that created the photographs initially.
Uh-huh. And if there were like a setting where the person's at a podium and is pointing this way, and if he then drew it with him pointing that way, is it still an infringement, or is the fact of a personality at a podium considered a, you know, a setting?
What would have to happen is, say, you took the photograph that was the source material and you presented it alongside your son's drawing. If someone who is not connected to the situation, who's not, you know, a member of your family or a friend or anything, looks at it and goes, oh, obviously this drawing is based on this photograph. then you're in trouble.
Yeah, wow. just flopping the drawing or changing certain elements in the background are not usually adequate to make it what's known as transformative.
Yeah, what most artists do is they'll get three or four photographs of a public figure and use them all for reference, but come up with their own conceptual drawing that maybe borrows elements from the source material.
What if you're a bad artist? I mean,
well then you're in luck.
Yeah.
You can also, I mean, perhaps the illustrations are meant to be commentary.
Well, some of them are, you know, intended to be sarcasm and so forth. But they are characteristic settings. I mean, there's, you know, if you saw this, you would recall seeing this person doing this thing. So,
well, but that's, you know, if you're doing the podium in the press room at the White House,
yes,
that's a generic image.
Yeah.
If, however, it's Hillary Clinton looking at her BlackBerry texting, that's
if that has been copied directly from that photograph with the appropriate hair in the same positions and the arm in the same positions
and the
same dress or jacket or whatever on, it's an infringement.
Hmm. Yeah, but you know, but if it's a generic, you know, sort of thing, like, you know, I mean, the Shepherd Fairey case, it took a couple of years for them to figure out whose photograph that was, you know, and so, you know, for a book of poetry with drawings, you know, unless it's a really iconic, famous photograph,
that's true.
I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Matt, thank you very much.
Good
okay.
luck.
We have a question from Twitter here. Billsville House on Twitter says, if I play free for Amanda Palmer, she records the show and gives it away on KStarter, do I own the rights to my own performance? Well, there you go. What do you think?
You play for free and she releases it.
Yeah.
And I know where this is coming from because the Billsville and I have had this discussion on
she's using
Facebook.
It on Kickstarter for her,
and she's
her video?
Selling it on Kickstarter. No, because what you are doing is your performance is really a contribution to this compilation, and you're actually reading the sheet music that Amanda Palmer wrote, and so your performance like a session musician, you know, would not have any ownership. This would be the same thing.
Okay, and you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Feel free. That's always entertaining. Let's go to Jonathan and Rhinebeck. Jonathan, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about a point of action. I option a screenplay. I get finance, and I'm going to my very first day of production to shoot. Is there a particular terminology that when I'm working with the script and development right through pre-production, the very moment the first scene is shot and the black letters on the white page are now transformed into a new medium, is there a terminology for that moment? Wow, that's dead air.
We're all scratching our heads.
You've stumped the panel.
Crickets.
Come on, guys.
Crickets.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay, so what, you guys do work in motion picture?
Yeah.
Okay, so I option a script.
Yeah.
Before I officially buy the rights, historically, you don't actually do that transfer of funds until you commence photography, which is the first day of shooting, so that you keep the option because you may never get to that first day. We do know that the moment the camera rolls, that those black letters on a white page represent a certain copyright in that medium. I now turn it into a movie, and by commencement of cinematography, that first day, it becomes a new medium. But is there a word for that? Because I've done this many, many times with attorneys, but I don't know. There's got to be some terminology or phrase that encapsulates this moment.
Okay.
Well, you've created...
All I know is that on that day, I write a check and I now officially own the script. It's the purchase point.
Right, and that's a matter of contract. You know, you would sign the writer's agreement and it would state that it's a work for hire and now you own the script. But essentially, by starting to roll the film, you're creating a derivative work of the script.
Yeah, but he wants to know if there's a specific term for
that.
Yeah,
like consummation or something like that.
Yeah, but none that I know of.
Yeah, I don't know of one.
No, okay. we could make one up.
And copyright it.
Yeah.
There you go. I've done it a million times, and every time I go to explain it to my producing partners or the writer or somebody on my staff, it's a lot of words to describe the moment. I was just hoping there'd be like a phrase or a term that represents that.
It could be a milestone, something, you know, I don't know.
I'd probably call it migraine.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, Jonathan, I'm sorry we couldn't be more help to you. You win the prize for stumping the panel. Let's go quickly to Peter in Latham. Peter, go ahead.
Hi. So I have sort of a silly question. Sorry to bring it back to the silly topics again.
Fine.
But so I'm wondering, because I don't know if you guys know about the musician scene on the internet these days, but it's sort of getting increasingly difficult to find an original band name.
Oh, come on.
I mean, you can come up with lots of crazy, crazy, weird letter combinations and number combinations for names, but I mean like a good band name that hasn't already been taken. So I finally found one, and my question is, can I copyright the band name or trademark it or do something?
What is it?
Yeah, Lotto. Lotto it is.
You can trademark it.
Yeah, copywriting it wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah, you can't copyright a word or a phrase. Yeah.
Word or phrase, but you can trademark it for musical performance and recordings, and you'll be protected throughout the United States. No one else can use that name.
Okay.
That's great. Okay, it's Jobs.
Jobs?
Jobs.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
The band.
All right.
Look out for it.
All right.
Fair enough. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah. Well, he spent a lot of time and he came up with Jobs. Let's go take a break here. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More with the copyright form coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting American Impressionism, Masterworks in Watercolor and Pastel, featuring works by Mary Cassatt and Child Hossam, arkellmuseum.org. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, currancompliance.com. Harlow Luggage, Northampton, Massachusetts, featuring Briggs & Riley and Eagle Creek Luggage, handbags by Bagalini, leather goods, silver jewelry, and gifts and accessories by Brighton, online, shopharlows.com. Woodstock School of Art, featuring their exhibit Woodstock Prints, Past and Present, a survey of Woodstock printmakers, curated by Ron Netsky, now through November 3rd, woodstockschoolofart.org. Baba Louie's Pizza, Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York, featuring natural wood-fried pizzas, salads, vegan soups, sandwiches, pasta dishes, and gluten-free options, babalouis.com for menu. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the greater capital region, Glens Falls, Saratoga, and the Berkshires, InterimHealthcare.com.
Bonus points if you can tell me what cartoon that theme is from. 1-800-348-2551. Here's a couple more bars.
Johnny Quest, right?
You got it!
Oh,
you win the prize.
Whoa.
All right, it is the copyright forum. Francis in Great Barrington is on. Hi.
Yes. Hey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Well, my question is, I want to know, what is copyright? I sang in the Messiah Choir, and the book had fallen apart. It was ragged. And I only took out the music that I would be lending my voice to. And somebody said to me, you got to get it for copywriting that. All I did was photocopy. Is that infringement?
It technically is infringement, but, you know, they're not, you know, let them come and sue the church lady. Yeah. That's...
Yeah.
But that also means that most of us infringe on a daily basis. So.
Yeah. And most of us do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's technically infringement, but I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, if you were going to make 1,000 copies and sell them, that would be different. But if you're just looking to, you know, grab a copy for yourself for singing... Go for it.
I mean, you can mark it up. Or...
Copyright is never black and white, and it's never absolute.
Well, who has the hallmark on Do Re Mi Fa So La Ti Do?
Julie Andrews.
Oh.
No. I have no idea. It's probably classified under folk music and therefore uncopyrightable.
Okay,
would it be in the public domain at this point?
Yeah.
Okay, the other question is, I'm collecting boxes that have a beautiful painting on it, and they sent their liquor bottles in them. And I've been collecting these boxes, but I want to make scrapbooks out of them.
Oh, go ahead.
And I just want to doctor up, you know, because I ripped off the the house number that they sent to the persons that they want to sell their liquor. And I want to use these, but I don't know. Somebody might try to sell them later. I think I'm going to be just giving them away, but...
No, that's fine, because you're not making copies. You're taking the images right off the boxes, so you can do whatever you want.
And if someone else sells them in the future, it doesn't affect you anyway.
And you can sell them yourself. I mean, it's just like, you know, you buy a book, and you can then sell that book. I mean, this is the same kind of thing.
Mm. You can cut, you know, if you buy a book of bird pictures, you can cut all the pictures out, frame them, and sell them.
Well, I'm old, and I'm not so itchable on this update, marketing stuff now, and I just don't want to get in no trouble and get to be a century old, and then they got me behind prison bars.
That's well, not going to happen.
I'd be the kind they throw in there, throw away the keys.
You call
Have
me
a good one. Bless you.
You call me Nana Fran.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Rick in Hudson. Rick, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. This is always a great program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a collection of old 33 and a third vinyl albums, and I went to a couple of the different audio-video transfer old businesses, and they will transfer the media onto a CD, but they will not transfer them to a memory stick or a flash drive because of infringements. Can any idea why?
No, there's no difference really. I mean, they're transposing it from analog to digital. They are, you know, making a copy.
But if you have a read-only disc,
right. No such thing anymore.
No such thing anymore.
No, really, you can pop a CD into your.
And
they're not copy protected. Yeah,
okay.
So, I mean, you know, and I mean, you can buy a turntable with a USB jack and just plug it into your computer and do it yourself. For $50 or something like that.
These two companies, would they be behind the times and as far as knowing that? Or
sounds like it.
They might just be overreacting. Some companies are just very, very concerned, and they don't know or understand the law very well, but they err on the side of super, super conservatism.
So there's no infringements in taking any media off of vinyl and putting it onto any kind of digital format?
As long as it's just for your personal use, no.
Right.
Okay. Rick, thanks a lot. It's Tim's turn at 800-348-2551. Tim, you're on.
Hey, I have two practical questions. One is, I am a songwriter and a musician, and I've produced a couple of CDs, and I sent them out all over the country and to all various types of people. Can you tell me what the court process, I mean, assuming I'm lucky enough to have somebody copy it, is the court process A, timely, and do judges, are they sympathetic to copyright infringement?
Yes and no. It depends on the judge. The judge I had was not.
Yeah.
But you were not in like the New York.
No, we were in Ohio for our case. Paul deals with judges more than certainly than I do, but.
Yeah. Timely is not a word that jumps to mind.
Timely is not a word.
A case I was involved in was exactly 10 years, and it was very, very expensive. We did come out on top, but it was a lot of mental anguish. And I think it depends on as Paul said earlier, copyright is not black and white. It is a sea of gray, and it depends on the type of infringement. It depends on, to some degree, on the attorney you get and the judicial venue you're in.
Are these always in the federal courts?
Yes.
Well, no, if it's been registered.
Well, yeah. You have to register.
These are registered.
Okay,
right.
that was going to be my question.
No, I'm sorry.
But
do they assign not only financial damages, but also punitive damages?
It's usually the cost of the lawyer defending you.
Well, the damages can be considerable. I mean, it can be up to $150,000 per work copied. And, you know, there's a provision for an award of attorney's fees to the prevailing party that the judge can give.
If it has been registered in a timely manner.
Right.
And these are registered. But I was just curious that...
Were they registered before the infringement?
Well before.
Okay.
I mean, at the time I did them, like 10 or 11 years ago. And nothing's happened, but I'm just thinking, is the court going to be active on this? And
you really want to have the case heard either on the East Coast or the West Coast.
Why?
Because those judges have more experience.
Right. Yeah. The Middle America judge we had, honestly, I knew more about copyright, I think, than he did.
So, but if it's in the federal system, you don't choose the venue, right?
Well, you can, yeah.
Why'd you choose Ohio?
Because we didn't know any better.
Ah.
But that's where the infringement took place.
And that's where the company headquarters were. They actually had an office here in New York. We could have sued them in New York, but that's also where we happened to find an attorney who would take the case because it was a very complicated case.
But they will assign punitive damages as well.
Well, it's not considered punitive damages. The damages can be, it's just the range is anywhere from $200 to $150,000, and there's
per infringement. So, plus attorney's fees.
Plus attorney's fees. So plus, you know, it can be substantial.
Mm-hmm.
Last question, and it'll make it quick. The last time I checked on the Library of Congress website, they would not allow you to download the copyright forms. You had to mail it in. You had to mail in a request. Am I right about that, or am I wrong?
Oh, no, they have them to download, and they also have an electronic filing system, which is one of the worst designed internet environments I have ever seen.
There's the government.
It is.
Paul. No. I am on the web every day, and I deal with banks and their websites.
Okay, well, that's another show. But
okay, thank you.
You used to be able to get copyright forms from the library,
right.
Also.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I bet you still can.
Yeah. Danny in Coxsackie, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Terrific show.
Thanks.
I am making a documentary that's been going on now for about 8 years. And it is based about a woman who was a very well-known actress in the 50s and 60s. So the body of her work is mostly, you know, from the 50s and 60s of films, one or two theatrical films and Playhouse 90 kind of things, you know, live television stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been... you know, calling studios, researching, you know, the copyright. Some of these copyrights are very hard to find, mm-hmm. The copyright holders. And when I have found them, you know, they've given me quotes and things like that. And some of them are from, because I'm looking for the licensing as well, you know. So my real question is, I mean, this is the first documentary I've made like this. I've made other films, but this is, in a way, a historical, you know, documentary because it's from this era. The licensing I've been quoted is so enormously expensive, you know, from the copyright holders, like, you know, $15,000 a second, which is, you know, commensurate with, contemporary movies of today. There is no, doesn't seem to be, it's just sort of a blanket statement. This is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm imagining that, and I've been told that, there are attorneys out there sort of are specialized in it, and perhaps this could be go under fair use, you know, because it's so enormously expensive for documentary filmmakers to make this kind of thing. That's why they're not being made, you know, I guess.
I mean, increasingly, stuff like this is being considered fair use. The studios won't tell you that when you call for a license. They'll just give you a number, and usually one that's extraordinarily high. But... There's recently been published the best practices for documentary filmmakers, which a bunch of copyright attorneys in the film industry put together. And increasingly insurance companies, who sometimes are driving the bus in terms of how a documentary is made, will if you stay within those guidelines that are in the best practices, they will grant you insurance. They will issue insurance against infringement claims. And so, you know, the fair use of old clips like this is increasingly, you know, being accepted as fair use. I think as a matter of law, it is fair use, but, you know, but the studios may chase you down and, you know,
make your life miserable.
Make your life miserable, waiting for you to prove that it's fair use.
Okay.
So then, so were you saying that there is a book?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
It's a pamphlet. If you just Google best practices documentary films, it'll take you right to it.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you very much.
Danny, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum, 800-348-2551. We go to Fran and Del Mar. You're on.
Oh, thank you. My son created a T-shirt design over the summer and was selling T-shirts. It's a logo and a couple different designs. And I didn't know if you should protect that in any way with a copyright or...
Did he design the logo or was it someone else's logo?
No, he designed the logo.
Yeah.
And the artwork, and he has sold some, you know, word of mouth, internet, and so on. But I was wondering if you should protect the image and the logo.
It wouldn't hurt at all. I would certainly do that.
Yeah, for $35, it's worth it.
Okay, and it would be a copyright. That's what we would do.
Right. Yes. www.copyright.gov.
Okay.
Copyright.gov. Fran, thank you very much. Let's. Jim in New Paltz. Jim, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to comment briefly on the person who asked the question about the academic and the copyright laws.
Yes.
Clearly what they're doing is fair use. We all agree that. But realistically, a lot of academic journals require that you get a release or from your original before they'll even look at your article. So it's not so much a legal issue as a practical issue.
Yeah.
So she would need to go to the copyright, or he would need to go to the Copyright Clearance Center probably to...
Right. Yeah, I mean, if the publisher demands it... you know, and I mean, that's another problem we all have with academic publishers.
Unfortunately, the vast majority of journals in the humanities do demand that.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. But
they're protecting themselves.
Yeah, they're covering their butts.
Jim, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, let's go to Bill in Cooperstown. Bill, you're on Vox Pop.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My question involves... a company near Cooperstown that manufactures dollhouse kits. They manufacture a kit form of my house.
Of your actual house.
My actual house. And it's a very close model of it. And the question I have is, I may be using my house as a location for commercial advertising, either for print or television, in the future. And I traced my deed. There was no agreement in the deed search indicating that a former owner had given permission. The house was vacant, I believe, when vacant meaning it had not been inhabited for a number of years. At the time, these people came through the house, took photographs, and began producing this kit form. It goes back at least 30 years.
So
they've been making the kit form. So my question is, if I use it for advertising or any commercial purpose, am I infringing on any right of theirs?
No.
No, I guess so. No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Could I stop them from continuing to manufacture it without compensating me?
No.
Because you don't own the copyright to the house plans, and in fact, if it's that old, there would not be a copyright to architectural plans.
Right.
No, the house is 170 years old.
And even if it was at this point, it would be in the public domain.
Right.
So
you're one and one.
All right. My last question is, they misrepresent the age of the house.
Yeah.
They misrepresent it by saying it was a house built from a kit in the 1920s.
I see.
Like the old Sears houses.
They almost list the address. I'd like to have that removed.
Well, that you probably could for privacy reasons.
Right. That would be a privacy issue, not a copyright issue.
But, yeah. But, you know, whatever misinformation they put on their kit, it's like...
Creative advertising.
Well, it's like the man who claimed to win the Medal of Honor and was never in the military.
Mm. Yeah.
Bill, that's where we're going to have to leave it. But thank you for an interesting call to end the program. And thanks to everybody who called in today. Interesting program. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law, thank you all for being with us today. We'll see you for the next edition soon.
Yahoo!
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. The Pride Center of the Capital Region, presenting the 2012 Annual Awards Gala, honoring individuals who support the LGBT community, Friday, October 12th, Troy Hilton Garden Inn, CapitalPrideCenter.org. There are photographs being taken, and that... I'm not going to give you the copyright for that. Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center, providing sales, rentals, and lessons. LakeGeorgeKayak.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for strikingly competent service at the board today. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the calls. Our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome Gordon Fricke. It's our automotive repair show. Stay tuned now for a news update.